Chapter 32. The tracks hugged the edge of the mountain on a narrow cut. To the left rose sheer rock, scarred by drills and dynamite. To the right was air. The drop-off varied from mere yards to a quarter of a mile. Where canyon floors were visible from the tracks, Bell saw treetops, fallen boulders, and raging rivers swollen by the rain. He scanned the tracks 100 feet ahead. His binoculars had modern poroprisms that intensified the light. He could see the offset spike heads clearly, 8 driven into each tie. The chocolate-brown squared timbers flowed under him with numbing regularity. "How many ties per mile?" he asked Malone.
2,700, answered the foreman. "Give or take."
Brown tie after brown tie after brown tie. 8 spikes in each. Each spike securely embedded in the wood. Fish plates holding each joint, half hidden by the bulge of the rail. The ballast, sharp-edged, crushed stone, glistened in the rain. Bell watched for dips in the smooth surface. He watched for loose stone. He watched for loose bolts, missing spikes, breaks in the gleaming rails.
"Stop!" shouted Malone.
Bell triggered his Browning. The sharp crack of the gunshot resounded off the rock wall and echoed across the canyons. But the engine kept rolling.
"Fire!" Malone shouted. "Again!"
Bell was already squeezing the trigger. The drop was steep along this bend in the road, the canyon floor below littered with boulders. As Bell's second shot rang out, the brake shoes struck with a bang and a hiss, and the locomotive slid to a halt on screeching wheels. Bell hit the ground running. Malone was right behind him.
"There," said Malone.
20 feet ahead of the train, they stopped and stared at an almost imperceptible bulge in the ballast. Whereas the freshly laid crushed stone presented a smooth, flat incline from the ties to the edge of the cliff, here was a gentle bump that rose a few inches higher.
"Don't get too close," Malone warned. "Looks like they've been digging here. See how it didn't settle like the original?"
Bell walked straight to the bulge and stepped onto it.
"Look out!"
The wrecker, said Bell, would make absolutely certain that nothing less than the weight of a locomotive would detonate a mine.
"You seem mighty sure of that."
"I am," said Bell. "He's too smart to waste his powder on a handcar." He knelt down on a tie and looked closely. He passed his hand over the crushed stone. "But what I don't see are any signs of recent digging. These stones have been sitting a while. See the coal dust undisturbed." Malone stepped closer reluctantly. Then he knelt beside Bell, scratching his head. He ran his fingers over the coal dust crusting in the rain. He picked up some chunks of ballast and examined them. Abruptly, he rose.
"Shoddy work, not explosives," he said. "I know exactly who was in charge of laying this section, and he is going to hear from me."
"Sorry, Mr. Bell. False alarm."
"Better safe than sorry."
By then, the train crew had disembarked. Behind them, 50 workmen gawked, and others were piling off the cars.
"Everyone back on the train," Malone roared.
Bell took the engineer aside.
"Why didn't you stop?"
"You caught me by surprise. Took me a moment to act."
"Stay alert," Bell retorted coldly. "You've got men's lives in your hands."
They got everyone back on the train and rolling again. The ties slid by. Squared timber after squared timber. 8 spikes, 4 on each rail. Fish plates securing the rails. Sharp-edged, crushed ballast glistened in the wet. Bell watched for more bumps in the flat surface. Disturbed stone, missing bolts, absent spikes, cracks in the rails. Tie after tie after tie. For 17 miles the train trundled slowly. Bell began to hope against hope that his precautions had paid off. The patrols and constant inspections had ensured the line was safe. Only 3 miles to go, and then the men could return to work, boring the vital Tunnel 13. Suddenly,
As they rounded a sharp curve that rimmed the deepest canyon on the route, something unusual caught Bell's eye. He couldn't pinpoint what it was at first. For an instant, it barely penetrated.
"Malone," he said in a whip-cracked voice. "Look! What's wrong?"
The red-faced man beside him leaned forward, squinted, his face a mask of concentration.
"I don't see nothing."
Bell raked the tracks with his binoculars. Bracing his feet on the pilot, he held the glasses with one hand and drew his pistol with the other. The ballast was smooth. No spikes were missing. The ties. In 17 miles, the work train had crossed 50,000 ties. Each of the 50,000 was a chocolate brown color, the wood darkened by preservatives absorbed in creosoting. Now, only a few yards ahead of the locomotive, Bell saw a wooden tie that was colored yellowish-white, the shade of freshly milled mountain hemlock that had not been creosoted. Bell fired his pistol again and again as fast as he could pull the trigger.
"Stop!"
The engineer slammed on the brakes, wheels locked, steel screeched on steel. The heavy locomotive slid along on the massive force of its momentum. The weight of 20 cars shoved behind it. Bell and Malone leaped off the pilot and ran ahead of the skidding locomotive.
"What is it?" the track foreman shouted.
"That tie," Bell pointed.
"God almighty," roared Malone.
The two men turned as one and raised powerful arms as if to stop the train with their bare hands.